You've chosen a podcast from Low Moon Uprising. Enjoy.
Okay, this is Low Moon Uprising. It is February 2nd. This is the first time we will be meeting in February, and we've had a bit of a break due to travel and death in the family back in January, and so we're past that now. Whence last we left our intrepid adventurers, they were still deep under the mountain of Ogrim. In fact, they had, I won't say retreated, because you were basically successful, but you had hurried to get back into the freedom layer, the liberty layer of Ogrim's Mountain, which is largely composed of refugees from other layers, it being a roughly 60% Medusa society, being the home to the cult where you stayed before, but were also attacked. So you were stayed and given theoretical shelter, but then were attacked by apparently another arm of the cult while staying there. So that was interesting. But anyway, that's also where you were staying when they brought you the orc body.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
So what has not actually happened, to clarify the timeline, is the three individuals who have the disease had not actually been healed from the disease as of yet.
They were intending to do that.
They had said that they had the ability, we've not been back for long, so we're picking up at the point at which you currently have three individuals, which is Xavier, Brunson, and Theon, who have the disease. As far as you know, you have solved Ogrim's problem, at least temporarily.
Didn't I cure disease on one, and that's how we found out that that worked?
No, you cured disease on Ogrim's heart.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yep, or whatever the organ was that was in the case that was infected.
But most, with the liver.
I think so, too. Yep.
But most importantly, Brunson is the beginning of this right away.
Okay.
Get on it, magic boy.
All right. So, we are picking up, you are back at the Medusa Temple, and indeed, you are back in the very same waiting chamber that you were given the first time. However, you know that you are awaiting a Berlin kind of thing, audience with one or more priestesses, because that's what they have. They have men, but they don't really refer to them as priests. I'm not sure what... Oh, I forgot about that thing. So...
Wait, are we in that chamber that they were, like, fireballing us?
Yes. The hole in the wall...
They patched the holes?
The hole in the wall has been repaired. Yes. So it's made of block, as you'll recall, possibly, I don't know. What they've done is they basically just melted over it. So the stone is melted shut. It's also how they closed this crack in the ceiling when they picked you up after your successful foray into the tombs.
If Bezor was here, we'd just have him conjure a little vacant sign, put it on the outside so they don't think we're here.
Okay.
Adventurers are three doors down.
So did anyone need to do anything real quick? You're anticipating not even like 15, 20 minutes at the most.
Anyone thirsty?
Roll for initiative.
I have many ouchies currently.
Here, roll for random encounters. Yes. As I recall, I believe your yards kind of beat up.
Yeah, we've been over. Stats and information again.
Okay, he's 5+5 hit dice.
All right, here you go. 5+5, that's a big dog.
He's a good
wolf. He's a war dog.
Yeah, it's a big dog. That's like the strongest character ever.
Yes, he's big enough to be ridden. Theon can ride him. And did some. There's a miniature for you, or an AI. Diminutive dwarf on war dog. Spiked collar in the rain in front of a kneeling blonde elven woman. You put it in and all you get is a kneeling blonde elven woman. Put all that in and all you get is a kneeling blonde elven woman.
With six
fingers. and armor, shiny armor.
And a third arm. Okay, he's 5+5 hit dice.
Okay, he's 5+5 hit dice. It's D6. He has claw bite, D6, 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 or all D6.
Yep. Strong knight.
And then he has a spiked collar, which he can do a body slam if both claws hit.
All the clouds are flexible. Yeah.
His base movement rate is 18 inches, if you care about that.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear it.
All right. So.
Wow. 18.
What's the body slam?
D6 plus 2.
What fight were we just in?
Just that one. Taking care of the actual organs.
The beholder one and the cultists were attacking a little bit.
The beholder, cultists, and then the actual foray into the tombs to take care of the heart.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's right.
That's when you got
right.
The
we rested and memorized
the ooze
before going in.
Beholder, so in here was the cultists.
Not much, but we did rest a little bit in the town before we fought the giant.
Yeah.
The guys that were the skeletons being controlled by the
infected. expected.
The weird yellow stuff that was hanging over.
Yeah, dripping from the ceiling. But before we went into that encounter, we had rested and memorized some spells.
Limited, yeah.
I was wondering, because I had both Ovaluk's Resilient Spheres still in memory, and I know I used one during battle.
It was like 2 hours.
Yeah, I don't think you used one in the Oozman battle.
I used one in the battle with the holders.
We didn't have.
That was before the Oozman battle.
Yeah.
That was before going to actually.
And we had we got some limited spells.
Yep.
Before we did the whole Ogrims, that was before.
The big rest was before that, and it was only really partial. It wasn't full. It was like 6.5 hours or something.
Yeah. Then we got another. Like,
but that's where I got mine. But that was after the Beholder battle.
Correct.
So that's how I got it.
And I'm pretty sure, as I'm thinking about, because you didn't use Thrar during the Oozman battle, then there must have been a time period that we did roleplay after the Oozman battle, because that's when you got Thrar back.
We were there for a while. Like, there was some downtime between the Oozman battle and
that. It wasn't much, though, but there was time, I think. It wasn't enough to nap, because we didn't nap.
We had to figure out how to stop the ooze from getting to the body part.
Yeah, he's talking about after that, coming back in the temple. I mean, I'm remembering you were back in the temple at least briefly, because that's when they brought the orc body and sold it to Theon.
That's right.
Somebody did. I think that was like right after you got back.
Yeah, it was like 10 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, so basically we're picking up like right after you got Rar back. All right, a small contingent of cultists comes down the hall, and they open the door. They don't knock. And a tall, thin man, he's got to be probably 7 foot tall. He is wearing a cloak, so he may be a Medusa man.
I'm not looking at any of them either.
Okay. And his cloak is kind of a pinkish color, like a faded pinkish color. And it runs to mid-calf, mind you, which is a peculiar kind of a picture because he's 7 foot tall. It's a long stretch of light pink or faded pink. And he just extends a gaunt hand with long fingers and motions for you to follow. Outside, you can see a small crowd of individuals that are waiting to accompany you.
I am on the defensive.
Okay, so he will lead, and the others will fall behind. I mean, you're all going.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Does anyone walk up with him, or is everybody just following behind him?
Following. Okay.
You do notice that Xavier has his sword drawn.
Classic Xavier.
I'm nowhere near brave enough to walk up front.
Okay.
And we'll follow close behind.
Okay. It's 100 feet down the hall through a door on the right, which leads to another hallway that goes about 30 feet. So you know you have to be along the back of that big room that's in the center of the building, which a couple of you have seen into, and you can hear faint chanting from in there. As you are walking through the building, you're just the one guy in front of you. You do walk past another guard who's standing at a door, and you do hear chanting, but it's distant, like through thick walls.
Trying to not picture in my head the rituals that they're performing, because they're probably profane and not very good.
It's pretty metal.
Picturing in my mind, they're all sitting around the campfire singing Kumbaya.
They're singing Kumbaya? I want to sit on human language.
Okay, so you take the corner to the right, and down on the left-hand side, so the big room is theoretically on your right. Down on the left-hand side, there is a set of double doors. They stand open with a guard on either side. All the guards are, as previously described, long cloaks. Most of their cloaks are brown, but some are kind of red or pink. None of those who are escorting you, nor either of the guards, are female. So are all really dealing with what appear to be male Medusa men.
This escort is wild.
What?
Yeah. I said, this escort is wild.
Ratio's a little
off. Ratio's a little off? Okay. Anyway, he steps to the side of the door, like basically walks past the double door, stands there, and motions for you to go in. And again, you see his long, like he appears to have four knuckles or four spaces on each of his fingers. So he goes like that, and it's kind of gross because his hand ripples and the fingers are oddly long.
Very alien-like.
Yeah, and he motions for you to go in the room. He doesn't say anything.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but females tend to be the dominant in their society, right?
At least in the temple, for sure.
Yeah,
okay, you step into the room, and you see in the room two females that are wearing bronze-colored armor, and it's rather suggestive. It's like tight around the breasts and tight across the stomach, and then it shows their belly button, and then it's loincloth, and their legs are long and beautiful, and their skin is extremely fair. They are wearing not cloaks, but like short capes that are about a foot below the shoulder, then come tight around the neck and then go up over their heads. And you can tell that the cloaks are moving slightly. So they're definitely Medusa. And then stretched out on a divan between those two individuals is a woman who is probably, other than the snaky hair, top five most voluptuous females you've ever seen. Her toenails are painted red. She has extremely shapely calves and thighs, and her pubic hair is perfectly trimmed. Her belly button is nice and flat. Her breasts are perfectly round. She's just absolutely gorgeous. Everyone can make a saving throw. Everyone can make a saving throw, make wisdom or less on a d20 to avoid looking
Something's
at her gorgeous face. avoiding your gorgeous face.
I made it.
Made it. It was very wise.
I'm sorry. What saving throw was it again?
I'm glad I did roll.
Wisdom or less.
I'm glad I got that roll. Because the second one was a natural 20.
Oh, I made it.
Okay, so everyone is careful not to look her in the eyes, knowing that the effect of Medusa is that you are turned to stone. Your escort, the guy that was in front of you, did come this far, and now having escorted you into her presence, he backs off, but he is in the room. She has only the two female guards who are also quite shapely, but they are wearing armor of a kind of maybe a little bit less than functional, but hard metal, that kind of thing, and the capes to cover their snakes, and there's a bit of a shadow across their face from the capes. There's a fireplace to the far right in the room. It's burning brightly. The room is carpeted. The walls are block. There are paintings and murals on the walls, and the one over her head behind her shows her standing in a cloak, but the cloak is open, and so you can see, or it looks like it's probably her anyway. The cloak is open, and you can see her belly and her legs. She's standing in the wind, sort of like in the picture, the wind is sort of sweeping the cloak backwards, and you can kind of make out her face, and so it looks to be what you can see, another Medusa princess or possibly the same woman. And she's holding a candelabra, standing on a cliff edge, the wind blowing at her, overlooking an army of stone statues. And so there must be pictured in the army are easily 1,000 soldiers. And they're all kind of standing ready but turned to stone. That's the mural that's above her, which you occasionally find as you're not trying not to look at her shapely form or her pretty face. You see kind of look above her and see the mural.
I don't even look the mural in the eyes.
Okay, yes. Extremely careful. Okay. Anyway, she says, "Welcome, heroes. We are very pleased to have you back in our midst, especially considering you have entered Ogrim's vaults and possibly assisted Stro in saving the king of the realms above. However, I fear your victory may be short-lived. Would you consider finishing the task? You are in a unique position to do so, at least some of you." One of the guards standing nearby, actually it'll be the man who's behind you, so he's now behind you about 10 feet, so he's speaking softly considering the size of the room, and he says, "They do not know, mistress." "Is that so?" She sort of cranes her head slightly to see if she can see any of your faces. Okay, and she says, "Some of you are infected with the disease and have asked that we would heal you. And we are willing. But first things first, being infected with the disease provides you with certain immunities. I am surprised that you did not gather this information in your previous encounter," the man says. "They are somewhat dense, mistress, being humans and short-lived or just..."
Thinking to myself, yeah, I get it from the elves, and I'm getting it from this guy.
Or just limited in their understanding. She says, "I will be brief. Once infected with the disease, a limited time later, it will take over your entire system, and you will become like those above, like those that you encountered. However, for a time, as is now the case, you retain your full faculties and can act independently of the hive mind that controls the spore creatures. Because the spore creatures know, or at least that's what we surmise, it is because that they know that you will turn into one of them in fairly short order. They tend to ignore you. They will give you passage. We have tried 3 times to infect members of our order with the disease to provide this safe passage through their numbers to kill the source But we have failed. Our most recent experiment yielded 3 individuals, not unlike yourselves, who were infected, and by all rights, gained safe passage. They set out upon a similar quest, which we are asking you to undertake, but they have not returned. And sufficient time has passed now that they would surely have succumbed to the disease. We should very much like to heal you from this malady. But because we know you are great heroes from the overworld and came to free Ogrim's chambers from this scourge, we believe you will want the opportunity to bypass the hordes and eliminate the source before being healed. Is this not so?
Possibly. How long before they become part of the Hive Mind?
So, probably 6 or 8 hours. Since time of infection. Two hours. The journey past the hordes will go fairly smoothly, since they will basically ignore you. You should be able to make the intersanctum of the beast in less than an hour.
And will they only ignore those who are affected? Or
they will, but if you wish, your numbers can be bolstered.
Why are you all looking at me?
Brunson, Zeon, and Xavier.
What exactly is it?
It is a creature. It has tentacles and branches, somewhat like a tree, but it is not mobile. It is a mole, a vegetation, with a mind of its own. And these have become its slaves, as you would if time passes and you are not healed.
But
no more.
That sounds like one of the older things.
66%.
So.
And I have a sonorous.
Yeah, something is in there. And you're like, you've heard some stories of vegetation. Interested in giving financially to Low Moon and support the campaign? Text LMGIVE, that's LM Give, to 419-419-0095. That could theoretically accomplish some of what is being described. Spores, molds that are mind affecting, that kind of thing.
Too much. Or spore.
I didn't see any more.
Yeah, and I'll save you the trouble, and Sonorous can't add much more than that.
Unfortunately, not too much. You don't hear too many stories about underguard flora, because usually people don't survive, right?
So what, do you want us to go in there and hit it until it dies?
Our warriors were prepared to burn it. I am not concerned as to how you destroy the thing. I believe, because this has been ongoing for some time, it will be fairly large.
No doubt, it will be surrounded by its minions, including those that you have sent in there.
But again, they will ignore you.
Until we start attacking the leader.
If it has enough intelligence to know that you are a grave source of danger, it should be able to call aid. You will need to be careful and even tactical.
With a proper force and a very heavy hand on the creature itself, if it's successful. If the element surprises enough, then it shouldn't be a problem, but in our experience, that really is.
So once a mind has succumbed to the hive mind, is there any coming back?
Not to my knowledge.
So any of those that we should encounter, we should not take pity on them.
Unless...
Sorry, that was mostly for my internal thoughts. That was more
to... Unless you mean to put them out of their misery now, although our specialists say their sentience is essentially gone, so they are not suffering.
So why can't Ogrim just deal with it?
On the one hand, I do not know. On the other, we have long surmised that some portion of the enchantment that makes Ogrim an eternal creature disallows his presence in the vaults. It is possible, or even probable, that he might be able to send other agents.
Does the creature exist in the vaults?
I think within the vaults or just beyond in the mountain. You did see when you were there before that it seemed to be coming kind of like through the wall, and that the yellow slimy mold stuff was dripping from the ceiling above and in plethora. Like there was a lot of it, so it was covering a 40-yard by 60-yard area. On a side note, you did see dozens of mausoleums of ancient beings, giants, surely overburdened with substantial treasures, but
neglected
neglected to lighten the burden, mostly out of respect to Ogrim and short of time. So.
But now it doesn't seem so.
Now we're doing him a favor.
Do the infected retain any of their previous talents? Or are they mindless creatures that just...
Once they are completely overtaken, no, I don't believe so.
How long
We've never seen it. Less than an hour, it should be. Our priestesses can reopen the crevice through which you came, shaping the stone, to allow you passage back to the same place. And as you know, because you just came from there, you should be able to get back within, say, 20 minutes. If the creature lies just beyond the crevice, you need only find your way to its root, its source. And if by some chance you cannot, then you can return here in time to be healed. None of our members have ever gone into the vaults and returned alive. It makes me think that Kil'dawildavud favors you in this endeavor. You're not sure, but it sounds like a reference to a god or some beast that they reference.
So, I look at those of you who are not affected and say, all right, so you guys are going to have to get some of this goop.
Excuse me?
You're coming with us.
I mean, do we all have to go?
Realistically. Xavier says...
I begin giving you the puppy dog.
Xavier says, it occurs to me that if we do not deal with this problem, then we have not necessarily saved Ogrim at length. Yeah. So I am willing to make an attempt.
Would be a pain to get back down here. And he'd owe us something.
Some of us are injured, so we would be gracious if we had some of our wounds healed and had to do...
Our healers can visit you and... There may be some priestesses who are on duty now who have some healing magic that you didn't drain previously.
We're expensive, but we're worth it.
That remains to be seen.
Well,
if we were charging for our services, the tab would be 500,000 gold already.
Luckily, you're not, right?
Correct. We are not.
No, resurrection will only cost you 100K up on the surface.
We are blessed to receive unto ourselves our sister Stro. We apprehend that it might be possible for you to rid our realm of this parasitic vegetation. And if that can be done, we will be grateful and consider all costs pursuant to your success.
Also, does this goo have to go on your face or your throat?
Can it
go
on your arm? On my arm.
Okay.
Yes, it can penetrate.
That's
skin.
Only for elves, so yes, it's going to go on.
Yeah. Face or groin?
Okay, I'm not going.
Face or groin?
I'm not going. I need those.
I think the goop got me on the butt. Come here.
No, I need that.
I need that too. I have a small patch of 2 inches by 2 inches in the back of my left calf I could possibly spare. That's it. Anywhere else I need. Maybe an earlobe. I was thinking about getting it pierced anyway.
It's like Achilles. You're going to hold you by your
hand
and dip you in the goop.
I saw a joke about that recently.
Well,
I'm trying to see if I can say it. If I can go with it. Go ahead.
I quite like my sentience. I suggest we get going. If you're coming with us, get gooped. Stop complaining about it. Not so bad. Kind of feels like a birthmark.
You seem pretty grumpy.
It's a little itchy. That's just the goop board.
Yeah, then we will go.
It's kind of work.
I suppose I'll be using goop as well.
Oh, you're okay.
All right.
Like, I'm not even
pretty face
to
like
be
yours,
today.
You're definitely going
to be. Okay. So, because they
I
can.
I think Jake would heroically accept
that. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, because they can reapply. It doesn't really matter if you make saving throws unless somebody would make 20 in a row or something, which is pretty unlikely.
If they can apply to us, can they cure us and then reapply it to set the timer?
They could, but they have a limited number of cures, so that would be a little risky because they would have to cure you, reset the timer, or reattach it, reset the timer, and then they would have to get to everybody that needs to cast the spell would have to get to sleep, wake up in time, pray for the spell, and get it before you need it.
You should just stay back and keep napping. Don't get any chance. Look at these as many times we need.
Also, stay back and keep napping.
That is unexplored territory. I don't think I'm willing to use myself as a guinea pig to experiment. That's just
a thought I had.
A nap train.
Choo choo!
The nap train.
Or. We're having a good time.
All is no work.
Sorry. That was bad.
Okay. So she gets up off of the divan. Her perfectly curved feet gently caress the plush rug. The plush rug in front of her. And then she strolls through your midst. You notice that she smells faintly flowery. You wonder where she gets flowers down here. It's probably an expensive perfume.
Magic.
Is everyone careful not to touch her or interact with her snakes that hiss and flail around?
No, I thought I'd give her a big old hug. The old smooch on the lips. He's just waving it.
11.
Okay. Let's see. So who has the highest charisma in the group?
Not me.
Someone else.
I have 18.
Him.
Wow. Okay, that's up there. I'm going to say it's probably
he's
the highest.
He's pretty likable.
Okay.
Jake is comely.
So she stops right in front of you, and her face is like parallel with your face, so her height is almost the same. How tall are you?
2'3".
What?
Gotcha. Gotcha, DM.
5'11".
Okay, yeah. So she's a little shorter than you, actually. So, like, you would be looking at her forehead. She stops and basically looks you in the face. Do you close your eyes?
Yeah.
Like, shield your eyes or just close them?
Close.
Okay, so you calm, but closed eyes. Yeah. Okay. Roll a d6. D6, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear
you don't look into my eyes.
Okay. So you realize that she's like gotten close to you. You can feel her breath, like she's right in your face. Do you recoil physically away from her,
no.
Or you stay calm? Okay. She kisses you on the lips.
Oh, saving throw versus death.
Okay.
Make a saving throw versus spells.
Oh,
even worse for him. His death magic saves much better because he's a group.
And she does reach up and put her hand on the side of her face at the same time.
15.
His poison paralysis is a 7.
I don't. Oh, here you go. Yep, made it.
Okay, so you gain a permanent +2 versus petrification.
Wow. Okay.
Now we're all
against petrified polymorph.
Just petrification.
We're all staying our own.
Okay. And then she steps away from you and she like drags her fingers along your jawbone as she's moving away. And you just feel like a chill. You realize something happened. But
yeah.
He doesn't know that he has a saver. He's good against petrification, but you know it.
Okay. I save.
Oh, she likes you.
Okay. And then she walks away out into the hallway and off into the temple. And everyone kind of is like, is she gone? Okay. And then he says, follow us. And then he walks out in the hallway as well. Okay. Fast forwarding slightly, those of you who wanted to be newly infected with the disease are... Congratulations, you're diseased.
We're all gooped up.
At the same time as they are doing that, they will attend to those who are. So first things first, those of you who are already diseased cannot receive magical healing.
Oh, lovely.
Okay. And I've gotten healed before.
And they know that?
Disease?
Yes, they're going to do the ones that were not already diseased before they are diseased. Okay.
Unfortunately.
They're going to heal us or we're going to heal us?
They're going to. So, Azuri receives 6 hit points back from healing, plus an additional 2 from a Cure Light. Kranken, how bad off are you still?
Down.
Okay, so hold on that for a minute. Dearmood?
42.
Receives 7 from natural healing.
Down 35.
And 4 from a Cure Light.
Down 31. Why is there always pens in here?
Because that's what you put in there, I would assume. Okay.
Why would you even have pens in your game?
I don't know.
Where are you,
Dan? I like pens.
They're dark. From the birthday party, probably.
Pretty sure my chubby belly absorbed it. So it's gone.
Medical sound.
Okay. All right, and then they're going to do on Dearmood an additional couple of Cure Lights. Total of 6.
So 31 becomes 25.
And
how's Jake infected?
He will be. He was not previously. An additional 3 on Azuri. And they also did some healing on Jake. All right. Natural healing on Theon. Yes.
Pain. Theon is... Oh, yeah, that's right.
5 points.
I did.
Oh. Brunson, 5 points. And Xavier.
Oh.
Ooh, I'm opening it high. I'm moving. Yeah, I got an 8. Ooh, I'm on a D10.
Here's the 1.
Nope, I'm going to roll 10 right now. Nope, I got an 8. That's good.
Hey, that's
better than 1.
You didn't downgrade.
Yeah, didn't go back down under a D7. Okay.
That's why the open-ended thing is kind of diminishing return. Yeah, I get to go from a D8 to a D10, but now I have to roll 8, 9, or 10 in order to gain any benefit out of it.
I think it depends where you start. Like, if you started a D10,
you'd be in great shape.
Very quickly, yeah. But if you started a D4, the odds that you get less than your last roll are very high.
Yeah, then it is supposed to be that way. There's a reason for it. It's healing in general is very variable. You're unleashing life force on a person to make them healthier. So, yes, the potential for extreme returns is there, but it's pretty unlikely. And that's the whole point. So, but if you can get upwards of past the D10, get to a D20. No, it's only if you roll 1/10 of your roll. Hmm. So at 18, well, like actually anything at 15 or above,
so
it's on a 2 or less.
The healing roll is still scaling up.
I didn't actually know that. I need to pay more attention to that.
You didn't know that?
You ever told me that?
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure if you told me what you rolled, I would have said it. I just usually do, but yeah. So basically, you would be open-ended high on a 2 or less.
But she's only rolling D3.
Yeah. Anyway, then it goes up to a
D4.
Yeah. So it's not like it's going to...
Yeah.
Your odds are not great.
If it makes you feel any better, I've been told 4 times.
If only we had a...
You do D6, thank
you. If only we had a manual...
5D6 on a 21 or less.
If only
it'd be fun to sit around one time and just try to roll that and see.
I wish there was like...
Yeah, if only we had like a core rule book, something that we could
do. What is it?
It'd be a Lomu Cheers guy. So it doesn't infringe on that.
Probably not forgetting
that.
You could.
Well, if it's
10% of a roll,
there's a 4d6.
I'm at 21. You'd have to get to 30 for it to go the next round.
25. It's always at 5 round up. It'd be a 3. Becky's a 3. Lorelai's a 3.
So, yeah, I would just have to get... Yeah, that's not unrealistic.
I think Ren was a 3.
I would need to...
Pretty sure he is.
Well, I guess I would... Does the roll go up by 1 at each level?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I would need stuff. I would need healing 9.
There's someone out there that has, healing 10 or whatever.
Maybe I should just keep...
They go higher than that.
Maybe I should just keep using my proficiencies on healing.
Lorelai's healing with 5 or 6.
Six now. We used to do Shadowrun back in the day. With Shadowrun D6s, used the original set was always open and high. So you roll a 6, and then you roll an add. If you roll another 6, you roll an add. And then the way the gun mods used to be would be like the first number was the number that you needed to increase it, and then the last number was the number of those that you needed to do it. So like, if you, it was like 4M2, you needed 4 successes to increase it from moderate to serious, and you only needed to get a 2 on the die or whatever. And so there was a ton of dice rolling. And like, one time as a Gen Con, I shot a guy and I rolled like 20 dice against him or whatever. And then because I braced, I did all these things, I was really good with it, whatever. I had a ton of dice anyway. And then I rolled, and like 5 of my dice were 6s. And this was a guy that was, he had plot armor, but I didn't know it. He was running, he basically robbed us and then was riding away on a motorcycle, and I shot him to try to kill him instead of shooting the motorcycle or whatever. And my first 4 dice all went into the high teens, and 3 of them went over 20. So I rolled like 6, 6, 6, and then something additional on 3 of the 4 dice. But my total roll was like 20. So I had 20 D6 or something like that to start with. And like, I'd never seen a roll like that ever in my life, and it didn't kill the guy because he had plot armor. I was like, ah! I was like, total realism break. Like, that can't be. Just rewrite the module. I just shot the dude. My successes were like 23, 21, 20, and 17. I'm like, come on. There's no way I didn't hit it.
The more modern version was you just create your dice. It's all about building your dice.
Yeah.
You need 5 and 6s are hits, and then anything else is a mess. So you need to try to get as many hits as you can.
To get as many 5 and 6s.
Each skill or whatever you're trying to do requires so many hits.
Yeah.
It's all about building your
same
dice.
Same thing. It's just a different mechanic to arrive at. You get to roll a crap load of dice and try to count numbers. So it was a little complicated because I took a moderate pistol, basically, and because I got those 4 successes, it goes from moderate to serious to dead. So moderate wound, serious wound, critical wound. So he should have been dead outright because I did enough successes to bump it up to a critical to make it a death. And then the success, the lowest one, the success was like a 17, which nothing in the game can ever get you to a 17. There's you never need a 17 because nobody, I mean, how could you normally count on ever rolling a 17? Like, you could shoot an ant off a pin at 300 yards with a 45 Magnum with a 17, you know? It's like, the lowest of those four dice was a 17. And James Lynch was playing in that game with me. We were playing together, and we were both like, I understand plot armor. It does happen. You know, this guy was supposed to get away. He's going to reappear in the adventure later or whatever. But at that point, you just rewrite it. You just let the guy die, and it's his brother that shows up later or something. You know, it's like, it wouldn't be not necessary. You know, we were not. James and I weren't too happy about it. That might be the last time I ever played Shadowrun. I think it might be.
Oh, dude,
you
ruined Shadowrun.
It was definitely toward the end. It was definitely toward the end.
Like I said, I quit.
I beat Shadowrun with a 23, 21, 20, and a 17. I beat Shadowrun. Okay, anyway, so that everybody has received some healing. Is anyone in terribly dire states still that they would need to really go? Yes, okay. So then they infect everyone, okay? And then Stro and the man with the really long fingers will guide the platform back up to the opening, and they will melt the stone again, basically, and create, they make like a hole in it with a little tunnel with stairs going up. So you can take the stairs up into the tunnel, and then they do close it behind you, which is a creepy feeling. It's like going in a jail cell. Yeah.
So you got one Medusa sitting there. Like,
yep, they actually are shaping clay shaping with their hands. Yep. Okay. All right. Dun, dun, dun. A short hallway leads to the vast chamber that you saw before, filled with mausoleums and actual individual sarcophagi and so on. And then you see the chamber that you know leads. You basically gotta go around the one mausoleum back into the area where the organs are. And based on where the leak was, the room that the creature is in should be beyond where the organs were, but up. And you don't exactly know how to get there. Okay? So what do you do?
Well, I guess we...
Just the party, or we have...
No, the party.
Man, I really wish we had a 14th level cleric to cast Find the Path. Ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
It's not powerful enough.
Because it goes, here's the pathway to get through the dungeon.
All you really need is a scroll. And based on how much a 14th level character eats and all the other accoutrements that they need, the scroll is probably cheaper.
We only get one.
Unless there's attitude. Well, plus there's all the piety.
Get the 14th level.
I will probably know. I cap it.
Well. If I get the 14th level, I'm like selling my money. Just opening a shop.
Why would you ever invent it?
Writing scrolls and selling scroll market.
I guess we just got to start going.
Start an eBay shop.
I don't know. So your options are on the start going, as far as you're just going to explore. Your options are... You recall there's the platforms up to the right, and then it kind of goes down in the area, and there's where the organs are, and there's the wall, and the stuff was dripping down out of the wall. Okay, so you can go there and try to find a way to go up into the wall somehow, if that's even possible. Or the alternative is to go like into the chamber to the right, which is an identical chamber, or the chamber to the left, it's an identical chamber, and see what's back there, if there's a way past, or to continue to work your way down around it like that and try to find a way past that wall, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that, like, I'm talking, yeah, so actually,
we came in, or is it?
I think it's turned around. Yeah, it's turned around. Yep, like that, because the organs are back there, the top thing. Yes. No, that's not right. I'm confused.
The organs are back there.
These are the stairs that we came down. Dudes come running from this way. We went this way.
Yes, that's right. Yep, yep.
The organs are back here.
Yes, correct. Yep, now you got it right. Yep. That would make the letters upside down if it was the other way, huh? That would suck. That'd be kind of dumb. Okay. Yeah. So basically, there is a wall. It's like the stone of the mountain. It's not a more brick and mortar wall or anything like that. Doesn't matter. And the organs are in crystal sarcophagi themselves. But there really was no, when you were there, there was no obvious way other than like if you could get small or something and go up through the crack that the goop was coming out of. That's the only way. If you had a way to get up to the ceiling, or get through the ceiling or something, then that might be.
Is there a spot up there that like people could be dropped off at by the ceiling area? I could fly them up, but...
No, there's not. I mean, like a ledge or something? Yeah. No, not really. It just goes like this in a cavern. Bottom line is, it does not look like from that room there is really any way past. You'd have to go to the right or left or around and search.
Well, what about the previous room where all the mausoleum were?
Mm-hmm. There's pathways. I mean, you can walk through. And on either side of this room, this big room, there's another one just like it that has the same kind of layout. So sarcophagi and big mausoleum in the center.
But we don't see any stairs looking across that big room.
Or and you only see part way because it's like this. It's all different levels. Yeah.
I say we try to go around.
Yeah.
Okay. So left or right? So basically.
Right first.
Rule of right.
Yeah.
Okay. And to be clear, there are mold disease infected creatures all over the place, and they are ignoring you. So you're surrounded by dozens or maybe realistically hundreds of these creatures. The ceiling is dripping with this yellow slop, right? And it's not bothering you at all any more than the fact that you're already diseased. When you touch the area where you're diseased at, you feel, your skin feels like stretched like cellophane and kind of pussy underneath, like you can make it goosh. But other than that, you know, it's not like dissolving into your bone or anything. Those of you who are first infected, really, I mean, it's definitely gotten a little wider, but it's not substantial. Like, it hasn't doubled in size or anything. It's just gotten maybe 10% bigger in every direction, spreading a little bit in every direction. So the total area is about 10% bigger. It's all could be.
Okay. I'm just walking by. Hey, Joe, John, didn't
that's Octavian to destroy the third. You can see it. I like it.
How do you spell mausoleum?
M-A-U-S-O-L-O-L-U-M. If
you both say letters.
Okay. A suggestion came up and I selected it.
Well, so it's saying letters are different parts of the word.
I was spelling it first. You jumped in.
You stop.
I paused.
I addressed the answer.
I paused.
Funny.
Two different things.
Also,
pause is just a stop that eventually ends.
You didn't wait for it then?
On the way.
If I start walking again, duh.
If you're waiting for the end, you have to wait until the end comes.
So what is not a
time? Eventually, you'll know.
He knows.
I don't think that's possible.
He knows.
Man, I wish I had cast this on.
He knows.
All right. Okay, so you go to the right. As you go around to the right, you see, again, another big mausoleum that's probably like 30 by 30 and about 12 feet high, and then the roof is flat, and then there are smaller sarcophagi, and there are creatures crouched around in every kind of nook and cranny and crevice all over the place. And you weave your way in, go up the steps, over the platform, down into the back, and you look, and you see an open area, and there are no crystal sarcophagi with organs in them. However, everyone can roll a d20, see whether or not there is something of interest.
Okay, if you see the it's sir.
I rolled a 3.
5.
I rolled a 10.
Okay.
1.
I believe that's everybody made a wisdom check.
Yeah. Right. I must make mine by half.
And I made every one of mine.
I made
even
mine
the ones
by quarter.
All right. So you see discolored rectangles on the floor. In the approximate shape and about the same location in this chamber as to, like, if the sarcophagi that included Ogrim's organs in it in the next room, if they were here, you can see that it looks like there's, like, a discolored area on the floor, like, where they would be.
Like the place was marked out for them or something.
Yeah, it almost looks more like there was some here at one time, and now there is, because the residue of the yellow muck and stuff like that are more spread out around than they are on the... Now, there is some on the rectangle now, but it's definitely more absent. And then there's also like almost like a dust or a residual powder or something that's on the floor, and it's strangely absent in those three rectangles. So it is as if someone's organs also were once in this room, but they're not here now.
Boy, I hope we don't have to go on an adventure to save that guy too.
Okay. No obvious openings.
We didn't think to check the other room.
They're very organized.
Hopefully we didn't go for the decoy set and save those.
Yep. I think the decoy sets in the case.
You think there is a secret door in the back wall of this room.
I will approach it.
Okay. As you step up, it is right behind where the three sarcophagus rectangles on the floors are, but there aren't any there, just marked out areas where they maybe once were. And there's 10-foot space in between each, and one of the 10-foot spaces, you see a disturbance, like a crevice that runs down in the wall, and then upon checking it, you're certain that is an indicator of either a mobile piece of stone here, or a space beyond that created it. So
I got poke
and prod. And do you have a knife or something you can? Okay. All right. Then he pulls out a knife and begins poking and prodding. Roll a, first of all, roll find and remove traps.
Yeah. Little
boy.
Not nearly as nice as I once was.
More roddy.
He's the nicest man I know.
Oh, he's
he's got club sticks now.
I roll.
Yeah, Dennis Rod.
He's
six.
A little spare of the rod now.
Oh, six?
Yes.
Very nice. Okay. So indeed, you do manage to... kind of run along. And basically, there's a spot up here. It's like kind of hard for you to reach, about 7 feet off the floor. But then it goes across and it curves down. And so where it starts to curve down, you put your knife in there. And as you're running your knife down, there's old, crusty mold and dirt, kind of like a combination residue that's in the crack, and you're peeling it out. And it's coming out, and it comes out the first like 6 to 8 inches, comes out all one piece, and it's just kind of leaning. And then it gets too heavy and it flakes off and falls on the floor. And you continue to run the knife down, and you come to a point where it's obviously hitting something in the crevice. And whatever it is, it feels like it's kind of rounded, like it might be like a rod or something, but it can't be any more than like half an inch in diameter. It goes across, a bolt perhaps, yep. And so you hit that, and so you skip it, and you go down, and sure enough, about 3 feet down from that, there's another one, and then kind of fiddle with it for a second, and you skip, and you go down, and about 3 feet down from that, there's another one. So there are three of them. The bottom one's about a foot off the floor, and then the second one is over 6 feet, like right around 6 feet, an inch or so off the floor. So that's rod, 3 feet or so, rod, and you can just comfortably, standing on your tiptoes, you know, feel out that top one. Okay. So, I mean, fiddling with it, you don't feel any way. It's in the stone, like it's at least an inch inside, and it's running horizontally. You can't lever it out.
Check the other side.
Okay. There really isn't another side as far as you can tell. You can't really comfortably reach the top unless you're going to stand on something to go all the way back to the end, but it just sort of starts there. It doesn't go down. It sort of starts and then goes like this toward the floor. Roll pick locks, assuming you're thinking this is some kind of a mechanism to open a door or a chamber.
36.
Okay, so after fiddling with the middle one with your knife, you have it in there. The crevice is a good inch across, and now that you've cleared it out, it's very clear, right? It's very obvious that it's there, whereas before it was pretty filled in. And you twist your knife slightly, and it feels like the bolt or whatever moves to the side. And so then kind of you twist it a little bit, and then you real quick turn it back, and you try to keep it. And every time you let go of the pressure, it slides back to the left. And so if you use two, you should be able to, like lock picks, basically you should slide it over, hold it, slide it over, hold it, slide it over, hold it, and it works kind of like a tumbler. At some point in time, it should get to the point where it's completely no longer into the other part of the stone.
Okay.
The problem is there's three of them. So you're going to have to hold the middle one, for example. What's that? Oh, surely. Now that you see what he's trying to attempt, I mean, you're paying attention, you could easily pick open and hold one of the bolts open. And then if it's open, anybody could theoretically hold it. Like Xavier, Jake, Kazuri could hold the knife against there to hold it open, and then just somebody's going to have to get the top one. Okay. So pick lock says you open. So you're able to hold the one bolt completely to the right. Okay. You open the bolt on the bottom, and Xavier steps in and holds the knife, so it's holding it open, and that leaves the top. Well, you have to do the bottom and the top. There's three of them. Yep.
There's 53 made it by okay.
Fiddle one. Fine. You wedge it open, and you're holding the now. So all three are open. All three bolts are slid. So then what do you do?
I assume you look for traps.
Yeah. Can I try to wedge the thing open? Have someone get a sword or something and wedge it?
Okay. So like lever it open?
Yeah.
Okay. So Xavier's holding the bottom. You're holding the middle one. You're holding the top one. So we need a volunteer to lever on the thing and see if they can pop it open.
Well, that's Jake.
Okay. Jake will do it with an extra long sword, not beautiful blade.
I'm sure it probably will, but now knowing where it is.
If you don't want to miss any of the story, Low Moon Origins, Uprising, or Outsiders, like and follow our podcast. Please share it with friends. Okay. So he does, but unexpectedly, instead of levering, like he puts it in and he twists like this to try to lever that part open that's on the curve. But instead of doing that, it shifts in slightly, maybe like an eighth of an inch. And then that part is going to move away from you, which means once it starts to move, you're going to have to move with it or the bolts are going to slip out. So are you planning on doing that?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So all three of you are going to work your way forward basically as it goes.
Scrambling
the bolts
over top of each other.
Yeah. It's a little inconvenient. So we're just going to everybody make a dex check.
I made it by 11.
Okay, so you managed to do so. Once it's about an inch or so, you feel pretty confident that it's not going to pop back in the hole and you can let it go. And what happens is that whole section of the wall, it goes up to there, but not pronounced. There must be a very finite crack or whatever that goes all the way across. And a whole section of wall, so we're talking about 20 feet, rotates in, and it only goes about 4 feet in. But in that curved part of the wall right there, there is a archway, and it's just less than man size, so it's probably about 4.5 feet. feet tall, but and it with a narrow, fatly squeezed type staircase going up. So 4.5 feet tall by about 18 inches wide. Mm-hmm. And there are, the steps themselves are 4 inches, 4 inches, 4 inches, 4 inches, 4 inches going up. Or something. Small. Okay. So it would be theoretically possible for anybody to make it up there as long as you don't weigh more than about 250 pounds. Backpacks probably have to come off, that kind of thing. And it is going up.
Plus, I don't think I'm going to
Theon will go.
Okay. All right, so Theon, followed by Yermud, followed by Xavier. That leaves Jake, Brunson, and Azuri.
Okay.
Brunson next. That leaves Jake and Azuri.
Jake over 200
I can take the rear if you want to.
Jake, 200
Okay. Let's stay spread out a little bit in case there's perils along the way. We're going to be packed in here like sardines. We're going to go like every 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the stairway winds up. It goes a little left-right, but basically it's a 45-degree angle straight up. So by... Does anybody have direction sense?
I don't think anyone has already done as long as Azuri does. Because for the longest time, we haven't had it in the
party. Yeah, I think it's
Azuri. Yes, Azuri, yeah.
All right, roll a d20 for me.
Well, we had Bezor for like years, we didn't have it.
Okay, so you are fairly certain that this is going to go past the end of that room, and the angle of it should take you up behind the other room, up behind the room that the mold was coming into. Okay? So it feels about right. Theon is in the lead, 5 to 10 feet in front of Dearmood. Okay. So at about 40 feet up the steps, it's a pretty much a 45-degree angle the whole way up. The steps are very small, so basically only like the front half of your foot is on the each step.
My foot?
Yeah, so they're 4 inches, 4 inches.
I still think that Theon's your 8.
You don't think so?
My feet are like angle of my thumb.
Okay, so maybe front two-thirds?
My feet are like...
Can't be less than 6 feet. Yeah. They'd be like, your feet would be this long. That's pretty short.
They're probably about this long.
That's like 8 to 10. A dollar bill is 8 inches long.
I did not think that was where you were going with that. I looked over and I couldn't really see what you were doing, so I just saw you going.
Oh, jeez. That's terrible.
What are you doing?
Okay, anyway.
Gross.
All right. It's probably my fault because I had a naked Medusa. Sorry, what?
Church.
It's the Christian Games role playing. Anyway, I was going to turn that. Okay, so you've gone up about 40 feet and you begin to see yellow slime on the stairs.
Great.
That's promising.
It's on the walls, on the stairs. Okay. At about another 40 feet or so, all the walls and stairs are covered with the stuff. And so you're touching it like constantly. If you weren't already infected, you'd surely be getting infected. Okay. So consider yourself moving through an 18-inch wide, 4.5-foot tall tunnel on a 45-degree angle upward, so it feels a little smaller than it actually is. And the whole of the inside is colored in brownish-yellow mucus. You're trailing through a nasal cavity, basically. It's pretty gross.
We're adventuring now, man.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. It's getting in your pockets. It's pretty gross. Okay. Finally, the staircase dumps out onto a hallway. Okay. And the hallway is running horizontally, and it's arched at the top, and it is about, at the top of the arch, it's maybe 5 feet tall. So where the arch starts, it's about 4.5 feet tall. And the hallway is overrun with this slime stuff, but it's possible to walk. You just got to kind of pick up your feet and step and slosh. It's like basically moving through mud. Once you move about 20 feet along that, you figure you're passing right over where the sarcophagi are now. And you haven't shared that from anybody, but you figure you're right over top of it right now. Okay. Just past that, to the right, there's a right turn that goes up a set of steps. Same kind of hallway. Now, basically, you figure you're traveling in some kind of a catacomb of the builders, whoever built this place, probably gnomes or dwarves, considering how narrow it is, probably gnomes, right? Or diminutive elves. But anyway, you go up this another staircase, and it comes out into a round room that is 15 foot in diameter, and it looks a little bit like a control room or something. For those of you who have that kind of concept, it's like a cell, basically, but it is round, and there are platforms that look like desks that go all the way around the inside. So you're stepping out of the room. There's only room, because it's 15 foot diameter, and the plus a platform is barely room enough for everybody to be in there, and the ceiling's only 5 foot high. It's a pretty enclosed space. Around the outside, there are open windows, and from once you step into the room, which I assume Theon does first, you can look out from here over top of a vast display, further than you can see, and you're clearly on infravision, so further than you can see, 60, 90, 100 feet at best you can see, and it's way further than that, over a field of mausoleum and sarcophagi, not unlike what was in the other room. So basically, this looks like a whole nother set of an ancient graveyard, catacombs type situation. And you're over top of it, so it's about like a 50-foot drop down from where you are to the floor of that room. And it goes on further than you can see in all three directions, basically right, left, and straight ahead, spreading out like a semicircle, basically. Looking to the left of the platform, you can see something that you would describe like vines or something that's coming down from above, and it's coming down into the wall outside this platform. And it's like there's a crevice in the wall where the wall is broken open, and it comes from up above and down into the wall, and it's dripping with the slime stuff. And as are you, for that matter, you're pretty well covered in the crap. Okay, so they look like vines, which means they're probably solid, whereas before all you've seen is like strands of the mucus stuff. So this is probably an outflow of the actual plant. It's when you go over, you have to go over and look out, kind of like lean and look up, you can see it goes up further than you can see, at least 60 feet.
It could be like above us.
It certainly, yeah, it looks like it does seem to get denser as you go up, meaning that would seem to indicate the body is above.
And there's no like luminescence or blackness?
There is some luminescence. It has the same kind of like greenish outlying light like the other room had.
So if I come off of everything, can I see the plant on the ceiling?
No, the stuff goes up into the ceiling. Well, the stuff goes up, looks like it goes into the ceiling of this room. It's still further than you can see, even without it. It's probably 80 to 100 feet at least. So the only way for sure to get up there would be to fly or to go up the vines. They look pretty solid, and there's definitely plenty of handholds. It wouldn't be hard to climb at all, as long as you're actually grasping. The stuff kind of like squeezes out of the way. When you touch the wall, it squeezes out of the way. It's not, doesn't have a real good cohesiveness to it.
What are we thinking? Going up?
Yeah.
Burning it here would probably cause significant damage, but unless the slime is particularly flammable, which you're pretty sure it's not, it wouldn't probably hurt the main body.
We have to keep going.
So flying up is one possibility, or climbing up the slimy vines if you're going up this way. Now, you could go back out into the catacombs. You figure somehow or other, those pathways that you were just following probably do lead up to above, overlooking at another place. In fact, you can just see another platform like this one out and away a couple hundred feet and above you. So past the vines, up and away, you can see another platform like this one, overlooking this huge graveyard. To be clear, that room plus this room means that there are at least 5,000 to 10,000 sarcophagi and mausoleum down here.
Some people never change. I mean, I can ferry people up with the wing. Be my one use of the day.
Xavier says it might be a good thing to have to get out, though, too.
Yeah,
especially since we're getting pretty far away from where we started.
Vines are pretty good for climbing.
Also, so far, our best understanding is we're going to have to go back through that very narrow passage to get back down to the room where they let us out again. We've probably been in here now 45 minutes to an hour, so we kind of better watch the clock for those of you who got infected, those of us who got infected early.
They're about a 3-hour mark, earlier.
3 to 3.5, because so of healing.
As soon as
you
can, it's like Jake.
I can climb it. So the vine channel is probably 20 feet across. So like you get on top of it, it's gonna be, you have to pick your foot spots, but basically walk on it like a road.
I would recommend
until it curves up too sharply, and then
I climb first. So we
you'll have to climb.
The rest of
think Jack and the Beanstalk.
Just in case it reacts poorly, we're the stronger climbers.
Okay.
I'm having some visualizing. Is there a ceiling in the room?
Not within sight.
So it's just like
it's too far away.
Into the darkness.
Yeah.
And it's like a big circle, or is it a big rectangle?
The vines.
The room.
I mean, you don't know because it all disappears into the darkness. You can see faint like green light on the one side. It's got to be 200 feet away at least.
And the vines are on the wall.
The vines come up. From your point of view, they come out of the wall behind you. So the platform comes out like this, has a ceiling on it. You're inside it. The wall, right where the platform comes out of, goes straight to the left, about 50 feet out or whatever. About 50 feet out. The vines come out of the wall, and they begin to curve slowly up toward whatever ceiling is up there. And when I say vines, it's like, think like thousands of vines that are like this thick. And so it's like 20 feet across.
The source of the vines, I think it's coming from the wall then, right?
Well, as I said, when you look up, it looks like it gets thicker above and thinner below. So first you're thinking it's coming out of the wall, but when you look up there, it looks really like it's coming down.
Right.
Going up is getting closer to the source, probably. So they're really not vines, they're roots is what's happening.
It's right.
Yeah.
So it's not particularly how free roots
normally travel, no. But if they were attracted to a source, or powerfully, magically enchanted immortal organs, or traveling through a crevice, so they all come together to get through the crevice, something like that.
It's just making me think this thing is smarter than it's letting on.
Probably is. It's a high plane. Generally, high planes aren't intelligent.
Okay. So the issue that lies before you is if you want to try to go up by a more mundane means like climbing, you're going to have to get over to it from this platform. In theory, the hallway did go past. Remember, you turn right to come up here. You could go past on the hallway and see if it comes through the hall at some point and you go straight up it. Okay, you go back out, you take the hallway down, and sure enough, you find a place where these roots are coming. They're basically going right through the hallway, and they pretty much block the hallway. So on that hallway, you could not go past without cutting through the roots. Okay. Also, no signs of any of the creatures in here, right? So you are out there everywhere you were. You saw them. In here, there are none. And you didn't see any below you from the platform, but you really couldn't clearly make out all the shadows and crevices down below. Okay. All right. So after, you kind of got to, like, find your way to the top, and then you find a space was probably big enough for one man to slip through at a time to go along the top of the vines, and it basically makes like a vine road or vine pathway that you could go up. Beyond's going first. You have no trouble getting through. Deermood second.
Yep.
No trouble getting through. You have to wriggle, but you're through. The slipperiness of the mold actually helps. Third was Runson. You have to.
Xavier.
Xavier crawls through. Okay, he's gonna. He's a little bit bigger, but now he doesn't have any trouble either. Ben Brunson. Yep. Okay. So now you're behind Brunson, and then Jake is last. So you're squeezing through a space that is not much bigger than you, and the slime is actually coating you and coating the stuff and making it a little easier for you to slip through. And finding a handle, every time you grab the vine, the slime just kind of like squishes out. It doesn't have like a lot of surface tension, so it squishes out, and then you can grab the vine and pull yourself through. So you're basically swimming through almost like a birth canal type situation. Okay. Azuri is next. What's your strength and con?
Mine?
Yeah.
33.
That's not too bad. Okay, so roll a d20. You're trying to wriggle through.
One.
Nice. Okay, so you slip through with no problem, leaving only Jake. And he slips through as well. A little more trouble, but he's through, right? By that time, Theon is up. So they are there. It's a pretty shallow ascent. Once you're outside the wall, you can get up and basically start walking. And the top of it, so there's vines. The top of it, there's actually a little indentation. So, like, as you're walking in this probably 2.5 foot wide little channel, the sides of it are as high as your waist, which means there's no chance that you would fall off. So you're walking on vines, and there's vines on both sides of you, like a little channel, almost like it's here on purpose.
And they're, like, going up?
Yep. It's not super steep.
Suspended in the room.
Yeah. They go from the wall up to the ceiling.
Huh.
Yep. Okay. And you're walking in the little channel. Okay. Now, it never is getting steep. It's never even as steep as those stairs that you were climbing. It's like 40 degrees at the steepest. And so you're in the little channel the whole time. Everybody's able to walk. You're actually getting some air. You're not claustrophobic, etc. But it's about a half mile. It's not a short distance. Okay. And then ahead now you see it's broadened out. Like you're seeing, Theon can see, and I think you're the only person that has infravision, right?
Yeah.
So you can see the outer edges of it. Everybody else, all you see is the vines. So you can tell, Theon can see that it's about 60 feet wide. So the vines are 60. It's a pathway of vines all woven together, and they have little strands coming off of them like weeds, basically, little bits where they broke off and then died and that kind of thing. But they're all woven together. And the slime has become next to non-existent. The only slime here is pretty much what's on you. Okay? So you're getting more solid, more tree-like, basically. Okay? And now you see it's coming to the ceiling. When you get to the ceiling, it's going to go right up into the ceiling, and you're walking up the pathway up into the ceiling, and then it's spreading out as it goes in there. Okay?
Can we consider how we might earn that?
You're going to get there and don't have much. Jake says, I have flasks of oil.
You probably also have flasks of oil. Be anything I have
oil. We got oil. I have a torch. Mm-hmm. It got kind of slimy going through that mess back there, but it should still burn. What about this wood? I mean, it looks pretty dry, actually. Now that it's not covered in the slime, it might burn real fast.
I agree, though, that the issue is if this thing has some intelligence and we start attacking it from here, may it begin calling aid before we arrive.
From where? We've left every mold monster we saw half a mile behind, unless there's another source of these monsters. And even the slime is not here.
More likely it's going to defend itself and we'll deal with it.
Is there any way it could take control of us?
I have no idea. We are going in blind here. Frankly, I think that if we're capable of making this ascension, so far I don't think there's anything one of those slime monsters would theoretically do. If it has complete control
able to tackle.
Yeah, but it'd still take a long time.
Who's to say they haven't already brought some up for protected? Well, we don't know where we're going.
The door was closed. There's no way the mold monsters could open it.
True, but there's also no guarantee there's not another path.
Surely there's another path. There has to be, right? I would expect in the walls all over this place probably to find those. Now that we know they're there, there's probably those little pathways and stairs and everything all over the place. From the builders, it had to take hundreds of years to build this.
Well,
this place must be truly ancient.
I mean, you don't have the best escape way. Either way, I say we just trudge along and...
Xavier says, how old is Ogrim?
How old do I?
I mean, you could see if there's a legend. Nope, not sure. Sonorous says, I think legends say he's 2,000, a little over 2,000 years old.
A couple thousand years.
But I think the legends also say he was preceded by generations before him, and I don't know if they were as long-lived or not. Back there's this place, maybe rates back to ancient times, 5,000, 10,000. How far back does time go since the gods created the word? Okay. Yeah, the Elven history goes back 20,000 years. Allegedly.
That's the big lie.
Problem with elves is they tend to rewrite history.
And that's just a curse. You know, imagine what's been lost. It's only 10 generations of elves, maybe 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So.
And keep going until we hit something.
Okay. So going through the ceiling, you see it widens out, okay? And then this room has a dull yellow light that's in the air, and the air itself seems kind of like foggy and gritty. Yeah, like spores suspended in the air, basically. But you don't, like, if you reach out, you feel them, they feel gritty, but you don't feel them like you're breathing them. I figure they'd probably be a good idea. Wet cloth is probably the best way to lock spores. Wet face cloths, is that the plan? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so everybody wets a face cloth and you proceed forward. But anyway, so that yellowish light that seems to be coming from the spores.
Sorry, he said face.
Face cloth, whatever. Okay, that yellowish light that seems to be coming from the spores lights up the room, and you can see it goes ahead, and what you see before you is a wide, viney road that leads up and levels out, and it seems to be going into basically almost like a little boxed canyon. It's wider than what you're in now, so it's probably a couple hundred feet across, and it goes into an area that is kind of hollowed out, almost like you're going up onto a stage, if you will, or into a little boxed canyon in the tree. That makes sense? It does strike those of you who know about such things that this thing is probably getting to the point where burning it may not be an option. Like, if you caught it on fire in a really big way, it would probably take days to burn. Okay. No sign of any life other than the tree itself. You come up onto the platform, and what you see before you is now flat, and it's like a little bit curved up on the edges, so it's like a, what is that, concave bowl, basically. And in the back, there is a stone altar. It's the first thing of stone of anything other than wood, other than parts of the tree that you've seen in a while. It's about 10 foot long this way, about 6 foot high this way, and it definitely is like a pedestal design. It's not a sarcophagus. It's like got a leg that comes up and supports it.
It's a rest area. It's so big, it's got rest areas.
Yeah, it's a little tall for a rest bench, but maybe it's a giant rest bench, right? Yeah. So, on the stone platform from where you are, because it kind of rises up a little bit, you're sort of looking down into the bowl a little bit, and as you're coming down towards it, you can see that there are etchings, like markings, on the stone platform.
Check it out.
Give a look at them.
Okay. So when you get down there, you're standing at its level, but it is 6 foot high, so you kind of have to step up on the bottom ledge to be able to really see the top of it, or otherwise you're just kind of like, you know, like that. Everybody okay with stepping up on the bottom ledge? Does somebody want to check for traps first? Because a character of my level would always check for traps first.
Sure.
Traps.
Okay, so the two of you check for traps, I assume.
Traps.
I'm
sure there's nothing there. 72.
You're just like poking and prodding. Like, hey, get out of here. Come on.
18. Anybody
18? Okay. And so you check along the ledge that you would step up on to look on the platform. And first of all, it's dirty and kind of like covered over with bits of twigs and vine that are dead off, like brittle, break up really easy. So you just gently kind of move away, and you can see that there are rune markings etched in, and they look a lot like glyphs of warding or something like that that are all the way along the front edge. Do you think that stepping up on there, if they still have any power in them, could be dangerous? Don't know for sure. But they go all the way along the front edge. They go all the way along both sides. But then when you get around to the back, you see that they go from the corners toward the middle, and there's a 4 foot gap. There are no runes
there. Would detect magic be able to see if they'd be active?
Absolutely.
I'll check my
okay. So yes, all of the runes are magical. It's only faintly so because they would only flare up if they activate, but they do have a faint magical to them. So they. So by your estimate, these are traps.
Can Brunson take a look at the recognizer
though? Sure.
Waiting
for him, though. Yep. Sure. Okay. So you clear off one enough that you can get a good look at it. So spellcraft. Roll spellcraft. Nice. Okay. So they do look to you to be like glyphs of warding, and the one in particular that you're looking at is probably a glyph of death. So anyone, any life that would touch it or pass over it,
see, that's why you said
would be subject to death.
You were right to be hesitant.
That's a benevolent DM.
I mean, you could have said no.
See this glyph right
and
here?
And if you had,
don't touch it.
That was a DM hint, and we would have been foolish out there.
See this glyph right here? Don't touch it.
looking along there, you can see that there are 20 of them lined up along the 10-foot in front. They're about, oh no, I'm sorry. It'd be more like 40. They're 6 inches across. So we've got like 40 of them lined up. Did I get that right? 10 feet? 60, no, 20. I did it right. 20 of them. And you can see another one that's mostly cleared off down the road that also is death, or you're pretty sure. So there's probably several of the 20 that are, but the one that's right next to it doesn't look like it's the same. You can't fully see it because it's still got stuff on it, but you can clear it off.
Okay, so they really wanted this thing protected. There are multiple death glyphs on here.
I assume you can't just, like, fly over it. I assume they're smarter than that.
Anything that passes over it will be subject to the same depth.
There's a 4-foot gap?
Yes, in the back there's a 4-foot gap.
Yeah, over here.
Where?
Right here.
Let me see.
It's right here.
Okay, so you're around the back. There is a 4-foot gap open in the back, and basically it looks like from the level of the tree, there's a little step, and then you could step up on the platform, and you could stand there to look at the whole altar without being affected by the runes.
But you'd have to go through the whole
gap. Yeah, that's what the gap is. The gap is basically, it's not an actual gap, it's just the space on that level that doesn't have any runes on it.
So I
can see without the detection.
Correct.
I wonder if some of their people already got to this far and then messed up.
There's no signs of any passage.
I don't know. I think that this is where the priest is an altar.
So it seems relatively safe to step up at this spot.
Yeah. Okay.
How courageous.
So now you can look onto the altar, and what you actually see is not markings at all. 10 foot by 4 foot wide. Yeah, so you can squeeze up in the 4-foot gap, so he's squeezing up next to you.
Hey, dude, death glyph.
He's got a point. If you happen to step to the right or left out of the 4-foot gap, it could be bad.
Coming up the
so
gap.
You guys stand together like this. We're okay.
Find the gap.
Watch out, I'll push you. I'm gonna launch forward.
Would you back off for a second?
I'm the expert in everything.
Hand to the face, push you back.
I push him back down, don't kill me.
No, he's trying to push you back down safely out of the hole so he can look.
Wait, if we take part of the tree, like bend it up to pass over the death glyph and kill the tree, right?
Dude, we're geniuses.
Maybe.
The only thing of that, that means it'll work.
Anyway, what you see, as I was starting to say, on the altar is the altar being about 4 foot by 10 foot. And over the whole thing, there's never a gap of more than 2 inches, and there are spaces for what look to be skeleton keys. So there's no skeleton keys on there, but there's room for 200 skeleton keys of various sizes.
Okay. I have one set of lockpicks. If you'd like me to start.
He has so many things.
I don't think we have time.
I would agree. I don't even.
So they're not locks. They're impressions for keys.
Oh, gotcha.
So imagine that, like, you that's look at the shape of a skeleton key. You could set of the right shape, you could set a skeleton key in the
set.
Check out Amal Dan Inc. for incredible opportunities to support the ministry.
No, this looks like some ancient artifact or control center or something. Or somebody who had a lot of magical keys or who was enchanting keys, creating keys. Like you could this is in stone, so you could use this to mold key shapes, for example. You'd have to come out and round them off then.
When I'm up on the altar pushing Dermot back, I'll try to will it to make a key.
Also,
make
then,
a key!
Did I detect the altar when I did my magic?
The altar does not detect it.
It was just
well, you really were looking at the runes in the platform, so you haven't really looked around. If you want to, I mean, you have it up, so you could walk around and look and see if they're in the area. Okay. Roll D20.
Uh-oh.
Just him?
Yeah, he's got the, he's looking with the tech magic.
Nope, that's a one. Boom, killed it. That's my fourth one today.
Okay. Anyway, so you scan around the area, and first of all, like in amongst, remember the outside of this bowl is branches, like branches. They're really probably roots, right? They're vines, branches. So this whole thing is made of wood, right? And in amongst the wood on one side, you see what looks to be the remnants of a body. It's roughly the shape of a body, and it has a couple of small magical things, one appearing to be a weapon and like that. You can't really make it out because you'd have to like go into the vines and get it. And then looking on the backside, you see a long stick that is glowing magical. Looking on the other side, you see something kind of frumpy looking, like a pillow or a bag or something.
Am I able to shape. Get these things on
foot? Yeah. You can walk right over the edge of the bowl. You just have to kind of like push and pull and get in there.
I'm not doing that.
Okay. All right. What is anybody else doing in the meantime?
Theon will be surveilling. Maybe looking for a way out of this area.
Yeah. So you feel like you're at pretty much the highest point that you can get. I mean, you could climb up the walls, obviously, because they're vines. But other than that, you're pretty high in this room. And you look back, going back to the edge and looking back, you can see the pathway that you've come up, half mile. You can look all the way down. It blurs in the distance, obviously, and it fades out because of the spores in the air. But it's lit. So there's light in the room, more than candlelight, right? You can see a long distance. And like you go over and look down the edge, and looking down through patches of the yellowy spore stuff, you'd say you're probably over quarter of a mile, quote unquote, up in the air above a graveyard, like mausoleums and sarcophagi. They just like little lines down there right now. And then looking on the other side, you see a similar thing. However, on that side, looking back and to the left, you can see a platform, like a control room, like the one you saw before, like the one you were in before and saw one. Okay. What were you doing in the meantime?
I have a pouch that we got off the horse and body, the crying horse. I had two little keys in it.
Yep. Yep.
Pull one out, so okay. It fits in any of them.
Okay. It'll take you a minute because they're 200 slots, but you kind of like probably narrow it to the top 40 pretty quickly. Like the biggest one is probably like this big. It wouldn't fit in a pouch. So, and the smallest one is like this big and clearly not that. So you can go, oh, it's probably one of those. And you're very intellect, very smart. So if one of those 40, and they kind of like in your mind, they go that one, all the way across. You can, you know, so.
Hover it over.
I don't know. Is it your wife?
I don't
know who else would be here. The beautiful and intelligent Caitlin. I thought that was my guess.
He's coming to bring snacks and eye drops.
Oh, there you go. You should have known she was coming.
No, I didn't. He told me not to come because I was already home.
So we'll play a tree.
We're going to play a tree. We had to had to infect ourselves with goop to get it.
Roll a d20. You have, were you going after the body first, or were you going after the pole first, or going after the frumpy thing first?
I'd do the body.
And you haven't fully completed your 360 degree scan either, just so you know.
I'd do the scan and then get the body first.
Okay, so upon doing the scan, you see back down the ramp, so probably about like 50 yards down the ramp in the viney path, like down in, you can see something that is glowing pretty brightly, and it's probably about the size of a loaf of bread.
That
one's going to be the hardest to get to. You have to go back down the ramp, and you have to go through quite a bit of vines, and those vines are hard and weren't very flexible. It can be done, but it'll take time. You definitely don't want to start hacking vines just in case this thing is sentient.
I could probably roughly point out where it is to like Jake or probably Xavier Hall better.
Sure.
He's a lot stronger.
Okay, well, unless anyone objects, the two of them will go down there together and work on it. Doesn't seem like there's any opposition here, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
so,
I'll go for the body.
All right, so to be clear, you're going for the body. They're going for the thing. You're putting a key in the hole. You're looking around. You don't want them to go down there?
I will go with it.
Okay, so you're going to leave Jake here? Okay, so that's fine. Jake will stay on guard. In fact, Jake draws his sword now that he feels like you're on edge. So.
I'm shocked he was not on edge. Nothing about this situation is calming to me.
Jake's cool and calm.
Oh, he's cavalier now.
Jake's a fearless. Jake is fearless.
That's why.
Yeah. He's already a fighter cavalier. Don't give him a holy class, too. He's got enough classes.
I was going to say, can he even be...
Let's give him a fight. Let's give him a paladin class, and let's give him a barbarian class. Let's make him the ultimate martial combatant.
Paladins are immune to diseases at high level. Well, you have to hit like at least Chiron.
And it would give him ranger powers.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a barbarian paladin?
They are immune to disease, but it is not at high level.
We already have one.
Really? I thought it was like 8 levels.
Really?
I think they start curing disease at a certain level. And they start casting spells at 8th level.
Barbarian drum.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they're immune to them almost from the get-go. Pretty early. Might be third. Okay. So we're going to pause at this moment to do our devotional. We said we were going to do a devotional. I'm not forgetting today. So this is the Low Moon role-playing Christian Games devotional number one of the month.
We get to do our devotional.
Yeah, congratulations. Well, high five. Okay. All right. It's based on Luke 10, 40, and 42, but not 41. So we're going to look that one up. You have to look it up yourself. Anyway, it says in Luke 10, 40, Martha was distracted with all her preparations as she came up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me. Verse 42, but this is Jesus speaking, but only one thing is necessary, for Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. I imagine to so many, this just makes sense and even seems to mimic God's always on activity trait. So we stay busy all the time and we think, well, God's always busy. God's always working. But it so easily becomes just rhetoric for why we cannot learn and grow. I was in Sunday school class not trying to generate contacts for evangelism for years. Even now I miss out on front door work or talking to clients on the phone or on delivery because I find other things that I think should be done. The world does not need more of me. I get that. I need more Jesus and he wants to save souls. I must not be ashamed of the gospel or his ongoing ministry to me and replace it with activity that is little more than busy work masquerading as essential labors. Help me, Father, to prioritize my desire for Jesus' teaching over all else. Where in your life have important activities substituted themselves for drawing close to Jesus, learning, and obeying his commands? Are you like Martha or Mary in your daily choices with regards to his presence? Is there any area of your life where you have known success in locking in and being focused on what you are doing? If so, what principles or procedures might you take away from that success to apply to success in focusing on his presence and your faithfulness? So as I was thinking about this devotional, it occurred to me, if there is an area of our lives that we realize like, hey, when I'm doing that, let's say nothing negative or picking on anything. Let's say, for example, you're good at playing video games. And when you play at video games, you can play for an hour or 2 hours, have great success. You organize, you do well. You remember to save early and play again when you make a mistake or things like that. If there is success in that area and you're good at focusing in that area, then what principles could you take from that area to apply to the area that Jesus said of Mary, there is this one thing that is needed and it will not be taken from her. Let's say, for example, you're good at getting up and being at work on time. Not everybody is. Let's say you are. Then what principles can you take away from being good at getting up and being at work on time that you could then apply to seeking out Jesus' presence in your life and being focused on him? Let's say you're good at conversation, talking with people, communicating, or you're good at writing or creating a story or role-playing or whatever it might be, taking care of animals, you know, whatever you're good at in life. Are there principles in that that you could then use to be better at blocking out time, focusing on Jesus and his teaching? That was my thought. Anybody else have any thoughts on that topic? So let me ask this question. Are you like Martha or Mary in your daily choices with regards to Jesus' presence? Okay. Maybe. I think I get the impression from the story. I mean, I don't know if this is true biblically or not, but I get the impression that Mary was the younger sister. And I think youth sometimes lends itself to being able to say, hey, I'm going to take the thing, the most important thing, and actually make it the most important thing. Like when we get older, we get burdened down with concerns, more trouble, more bills to pay, more priorities. I want to make sure this gets done. I think about like when you turn 50, you start thinking, what's my legacy going to be? What am I going to leave behind when I die? How am I going to change the world? You know, because I'm getting older now and I realize my time is growing shorter. I think people become very concerned when they get older.
As you get older, you take on more responsibility. I mean, look at a 7-year-old responsibility level versus a 20-year-old, 50-year-old family.
Yeah. So to break down what you just said, I agree with you, but at the same time, I'm not sure it's true. I think that's what we think is true.
I mean, it makes it easier for the
truth. Yeah, we have our list of things that we really want to impact. So, like, I just can't let it go that I'm married, that I have a house, that I have a family, that I have kids, that I have grandkids, that I have a job. Those are all things that I really want to think are important. But if a 7-year-old is old enough to know that he has sin, needs a savior, and that he can actually choose to follow follow Christ, then he doesn't have any less actual responsibility than a 50-year-old or a 70-year-old, right? You can't save anybody else. So, like Paul says, my sin is the absolute worst sin, you know? And for me, I can say my sin is what would put me in hell for eternity, not anyone else's. So do I want to see anybody go to hell? No, I don't want to see anybody go to hell. So I should be faithful in sharing the gospel. But I think our responsibilities, like, so if you have a lot of things in your life, your responsibility is that each one of those things, you impact them however you are for Christ. And if you have a few things, like people who are like struggling for food, they still have to decide not to murder the shopkeeper to get a loaf of bread. You know, shoplifting is one thing, but killing somebody is another. Or they still have to decide not to go the extra mile and, you know, really commit terrible crimes to become wealthy. You know, everybody has the same burden of moral choice in whatever their circumstances are. But I do think, like what you're saying too, that's why Jesus said it's hard for the wealthy man to enter the kingdom of God.
It's a matter of a hierarchy.
Yeah.
You don't put your hobbies in front of your taking care of your children, for example.
Right. At least you're not supposed to.
Yeah, you don't put something ahead of God kind of thing logically. Everything has its importance, and it has its proper amount of importance. Of the more shorter, probably.
Yeah. I think Martha was thinking, man, here we have Jesus and the disciples, the Son of God. Of course I want to serve him. She was serving him in the way that she was wired to, making meals and cleaning up the house and taking care of things, taking care of people. She was serving and caring. That's cool. And then Jesus said, but there is just one thing that is the most important thing, and it will not be taken
from her and
helping with
all
me
that.
And learning and growing.
Serving and helping and all that is important, but it's not the most
important. Yeah, so we take this to the nth degree, then you realize that there's gonna come a time, there's a moment in your life, I don't know when it is, there's gonna come a moment in time at which just being with Jesus, just spending time with him, talking to him, hearing what he has to say, figuring out what he wants is more important than add literally just about every responsibility we have. More important than being at work, more important than paying bills, more important than taking care of ourselves, more important than taking a risk or not taking a risk, relationships, what people want from me, what somebody's got to say, the phone's ringing. It's more important than everything based on it. There's going to be a moment in time. And then I wonder if it's not actually every moment in time and everything else is just like, yeah, it's good. He didn't say what she was doing was bad. He didn't say you can't cook or serve people. He just said Mary has chosen this one most important thing and it's not going to be taken from herself. It's an interesting thought. And I like the assessment that I think any given moment we could be like Mary or Martha. It's interesting that the story does not paint Martha in a bad light. There's nothing wrong with her at all that she wants to do that. The only place that maybe it does that a little bit is when she's saying, well, make her serve. Make her come be with me in the kitchen or whatever like that instead of just sitting at your feet and learning and whatever. And Jesus says, well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take away from her that one good thing. Anyway, that is our PCGT Devo 1 for the month of February. And we actually managed to remember to do it. I forgot to do it last night. So the goal is to try to have one. If you're a RPCGT game master, what Ron and I were talking about anyway, is to try to have them designed at the beginning of each month. And then so if you run two sessions, you would use 1 and 2. And you could skip to 3 if you know that everybody in your group is, you know, in other groups and has already heard 1 and 2 or whatever like that. If you know they've all heard 1, 2, and 3, you could have another one. So we can have as many as we need. So that's kind of what we're thinking. Okay, let's have a brief word of prayer and then we'll see if we can't solve this tree mystery. I think we're doing pretty good on time. We're trying to stop by 9.
Mystery.
Yeah, this mystery. There's no E in there. That's the problem.
This tremendous.
It needs an E. The tree is lacking vitamin E. Very unhealthy. It's got a skin deficiency. Actually, it looks pretty healthy right here. Except that, you know how it's surviving? Because I need chlorophyll. I mean, it's underground. Not a tree like in the traditional sense. Or maybe it does have an outside existence somewhere, like on Ogrim's Mountain on the
maybe
side of the mountain.
We just saw a big tree sticking out of the mountain. We just never noticed.
Yeah. Surely there was trees on the mountain. Father in heaven, we thank you so much for your word and for even the enduring testimony of Mary and Martha. Some say it'll be Mary that comes and pours the perfume on Jesus' feet and wipes his feet with her hair. And if that's the same woman, then I kind of get that. Because the story, what she shows us in this story about what she says, thinks, and knows is important. And that sure makes sense. Lord, I'm not big on perfume at all or using my hair for that kind of thing. But I do want to recognize that you are God and that I want to spend time with you and lock it in and be focused. And I want to learn from others in my life where you've blessed me with so much that I can learn from those areas and learn how to lock in and how to think that you are most important and how to, as we talked about in the sermon this morning, how to reform my thoughts to give you proper place. Help us all do that so we can be men who honor God with every moment of every day. And Caitlin can be a woman. We'll let her do that. And we appreciate you for having her be here right now in this moment and her joining our spirit and showing love. love toward her husband and toward us just by being here, and we're grateful. Bless us as we continue to play for another hour and a half or so. Be with Ariana. She's home getting ready for bed. Sherry, as she's winding down. Mike and Ty and James are going through more sickness, and the Isaacs too. And be with Larry because he's home alone in his apartment having a hard time keeping it warm. Come get his gas turned back on tomorrow, and whatever other things people need, you know what they are, and you can provide them, and we just want to let you do it. Thank you for it all. In Jesus' name, amen. And we're off. Normally, we would pause the recorder here for dinner, but we skipped dinner, sort of. We kind of did dinner. Some people had dinner, like, at the beginning. I'm going to get a snack. Okay? Everything's good? Here, okay, we'll hop.
Stay tuned for more Lomunian adventures.